I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Palestinians now have their second president 2 months after the death of Yasser Arafat. His former prime minister, Mahmoud Abbas, has won the presidency of the Palestinian Authority with 62% of the votes cast. His closest rival had less than 20%. Abbas, who's more popularly known as Abu Mazen, has already told his supporters that difficult and complicated missions lie ahead. The president-elect must win the support of people in the Palestinian militant groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad, which boycotted the election. He also has to begin the cleanup and reorganization of the Palestinian Authority, and all this with an eye on new peace negotiations with Israel. Today on the program, an assessment of what's ahead for Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinians. Will his election be a turning point? Can Abbas persuade Palestinians that their future lies at the negotiating table rather than in violent opposition to Israel? What's the role of the U.S. now? Is it time for the Bush administration to get back into the business of brokering peace? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're starting today with Rashid Khalidi. He is the Edward Said Professor of Arab Studies and Director of the Middle East Institute at Columbia University, joining us this morning from a studio in New York City. Rashid, thanks a lot for coming in.
A pleasure. Thanks.
Let me start with the same question that I posed to our listeners here. Will this election be a turning point?
I'm not sure that it'll be a turning point in relations between the Palestinians and the Israelis, because I think that for the foreseeable future, the occupation will continue. Nothing in the mandate of the new Israeli government indicates that the occupation of the West Bank is going to be ended anytime soon. On the other hand, I think it will be extremely important as marking the beginning of a transformation of Palestinian politics, a change in leadership, hopefully establishment of a rule of law, and the beginning of a real public debate among Palestinians about strategy. How do they want to get where they want to get, and where do they want to get? These are things that have more or less been in abeyance. Certainly there has been no rule of law. There's been rampant corruption. And there has not been much in the way of a debate really for the past 10 or 15 years. And the last couple of months have seen an extraordinary outpouring of views on all of these subjects. And all of this, I think, is good. But I doubt that, on the other hand, it's going to lead to very much in terms of Palestinian and Israeli relations, unless there's a real change in Washington as well as in Israel.
Help me with your interpretation of the numbers here. There was lots of talk prior to the election that there wouldn't really be much of a turnout, that people either would not believe that the election was meaningful enough to go to the trouble of going through checkpoints to vote, or that people would feel intimidated by Hamas and Islamic Jihad. The number we have this morning from the territories is 66% turnout. Now, does that indicate to you a kind of enthusiasm or at least an interest among Palestinians in saying, okay, let's go the way of the ballot box for the time being?
Hanna Nasser, who's the head of the Electoral Commission, was predicting last night on television, which that's say early morning their time on television, that the turnout would come to over 70% when all of the distant precincts were finally counted. I think that that number, whether 66 or 70, shows that there was an overwhelming desire for change on the part of Palestinians and a desire to show the world that they were perfectly capable of running a clean election. And I think it should be said, given the extraordinary obstacles to holding an election under occupation, given the fact that 120,000 Palestinians in East Jerusalem were more or less prevented from voting, basically the Israelis provided difficult means for several thousand of those 120,000 to vote, given all the other the fact that this is a war zone in some parts of the Gaza Strip, certainly, the fact that 70% of the eligible voters came out to vote is a really quite extraordinary sign that the Palestinians want to show that they can do this and that they really have a hopes for a change. Had they been sunken in apathy, had they accepted the idea that nothing could change, nobody would have bothered to vote. It was very difficult, as you suggested, to get to the polling places. Mm-hmm.
Let's hear from Daoud Kattab. He's joining us on the line from Amman, Jordan. He's director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah. Daoud, it's nice to hear from you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Tell me what you're seeing from your perspective, a certain degree of enthusiasm for Mr. Abbas. I mean, the result's not a great surprise to anyone. What are people saying?
Well, I voted in Jerusalem. I was one of the people that came out and voted, and I was quite impressed with the way it was organized, the efficiency of the schools and school teachers who were volunteering to man and woman and sit on the different places. And there was a feeling that this is an extraordinary important event for Palestinians. There is a feeling that change is necessary, and I think people are quite happy with the fact that we had, in an Arab country, for us Palestinians in an Arab country, in elections where there were more than one candidate and where their vote, the result is not 99%. So we're quite pleased and proud of the way things went, and I think most Palestinians feel that this was a very important date in our current history.
Let me just for a moment set aside, Daoud, the questions about a return to peace negotiations with Israel. Rashid Khalili was just talking about the importance of reorganizing the Palestinian Authority. There is that issue of cooperation with the militants. How much of a honeymoon period is Mahmoud Abbas going to have here to try and put his stamp on these two issues that are so central to Palestinians?
Well, I think you have two dates that you have to take into consideration when you ask this question. Next July is going to be the Palestinian legislative elections, and I think next August we're supposed to have a meeting of the Fatah Assembly, General Assembly. The legislative elections are going to be, again, nationwide elections. The early signs is that Hamas will participate in this legislative process. And I think this will be an important date to look at. So I think between now and the next July is going to be the honeymoon of Mr. Abbas. He needs to really show results. He needs to show that things are moving. He needs to reinvigorate the peace process and the rule of law, which he ran on the platform that he's going to bring back rule of law and stop lawlessness and chaos of the militarization of the Intifada. If he succeeds, even partially in these areas, he will do, and his group and his supporters will do well in the legislative elections. And I think it will be quite interesting to see what happens after that. But that would be a date that I think people should look at.
And Rashid, your thoughts on that as well, because a lot of what we read about the current state of security in places like Gaza City and in some parts of the West Bank is that many of the towns appear to be more under the control of the regional security chiefs in an almost warlord-type fashion without any regard to law and justice. Are people really going to give Abbas 6 months to try and get that those matters in hand, or is there going to be a greater impatience?
I'm not sure he has that long. I think Dawood is right that those are the cutoff dates in the sense of there will be elections both within Fatah and for the Palestinian Legislative Council. I think he'll be judged on two things. The first will be these crucial internal issues. And the second will be, will the United States and Israel change their policy of basically demanding everything from the Palestinians and grudgingly giving very little in return? This is now a Bush-Sharon policy. This is not an Israeli policy or an American policy. They seem to be joined at the hip, this administration here and that government there. And they have had so far shown a joint wall. They've put forward an almost stonewall position, unwilling to enter into serious negotiations about all the really important issues, refugees, Jerusalem, borders, sovereignty, removing the settlements and so forth, hiding behind this proposal of Sharon's for withdrawal from Gaza and a small part of the northern West Bank while settlement continues and while the Bush administration has explicitly said that it will allow Israel to keep most of its settlements in the West Bank. If Abu Mazen is able to make progress on the domestic front in terms of issues like building a consensus and in terms of issues like stopping attacks on Israel, in terms of issues like cleaning up some of the rampant corruption, but is unable to achieve anything with Washington and Israel, I think his honeymoon will not last 6 months, frankly, because this was in effect an endorsement not only of a policy of the rule of law and cleaning up corruption. It was also an endorsement of a renewed attempt to come to an agreement with the Israelis. And if all the Israelis are going to say is, we will decide what to do and you can come along and sign on whatever it is we tell you, that will lead to a rapid end, I think, of this honeymoon with this newly elected leader.
Daoud Kataib, quick last question to you. There was some polling done by the Center for Policy and Survey Research in Ramallah quite recently, which indicated that a majority of Palestinians still believe that violence can achieve more than negotiations. Does this vote mean that that attitude has changed?
Well, I think the situation is very volatile and changes from one day to another. Today, 70% believe in peace talks. In 3 months, the vote you spoke about would be also valid. It's a very fluid situation, and people judge by the situation on the ground. Now, obviously, as Rashid said, people are going to give the peace talks and Mahmoud Abbas a chance to try to deliver something. But I can promise you things and the public would change very quickly if they see there's nothing happening on the ground.
Daoud, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. Daoud Kataib, Director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah. When we come back after the break, the president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem, Sari Nusseibeh, will be here in our Boston studio. We're continuing our assessment of what's ahead for Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinians and whether or not this election is going to be anything of a turning point. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection this hour, an assessment of the results of the Palestinian presidential election held yesterday. Mahmoud Abbas winning a little over 62%, about 66% of eligible voters at the polls. Most people looking at that saying the man does have a mandate, but a mandate for what? And how much patience will Palestinians, will Israelis, will Americans, will all the people who will be watching this man so carefully have as he sets about his work as the new president of the Palestinian Authority? We'd like to have you join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Rashid Khalidi is with us from a studio in New York where he works as director of the Middle East Institute at Columbia University. And joining me here in the Connection studio, Sari Nusseibeh, who is on leave from his job as president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem, currently working as a fellow at the Radcliffe Institute. And it's nice to have you with us as well, Mr. Nusseibeh.
Nice to be here.
Tell me what your thoughts are on the day after. Are you encouraged by news of Mr. Abbas's election?
Well, I can't say that I'm encouraged. The results, as everybody knows, have been actually foreseen. We knew that Abbas was going to win. We more or less knew that this was going to be the margin. And
The turnout didn't surprise you?
The turnout was a bit better, in fact, slightly better than the 96 elections, which is a good thing, even in Jerusalem, and in spite of the problems. So I think, you know, all of that wasn't surprising. And actually, it reflects something perhaps important that one has to take into account, which is the fact that the Palestinian people in general are predisposed to a peaceful solution, if that's possible.
And I'm just wondering, in your view of what's ahead for Mr. Abbas, the sort of American media shorthand is, Abbas is president, now what about peace with Israel? There is so much that needs doing within the Palestinian Authority. What's he going to be turning his attention to first?
Well, as we heard earlier, Rashid saying and other people saying, there are two major issues that he has to confront. One is the internal front, so to speak, and this has to do with law and order. It has to do with corruption. It has to do with setting up institutions, making sure that the organization of the government is well run and so on. But equally urgently, there is the need also to address the overarching problem of being under occupation. And he has to therefore develop a particular posture. He has to have a positive attitude and bring the people behind him in or towards peaceful negotiations with Israel. And I think he has to take an initiative in this direction.
I'd like to hear from both of you on the point about, can he present the same face to the Palestinian people that he presents to the rest of the world? He was so criticized in the days before the election for saying in a rally, yes, we have to unite against the Zionist enemy. Everybody took that and they said, my God, we've got Yasser Arafat in a suit and tie. What a waste of time this whole thing is. But he has a very large constituency within Gaza, within the West Bank, that is attracted by that kind of rhetoric. So does he have to tone that down? Does the rest of the world have to interpret it in a different way?
No, I think that Israel is the enemy of the Palestinians. The Palestinians are under occupation, and it is because that the Palestinians are under occupation and that Israel is the enemy that, in fact, Abu Mazen and the Palestinian Authority have to try and reach or make a deal with that enemy. Obviously, we have to make a deal with our enemy. We have to make peace with our enemy. Now, I don't think there's any problem in the sense of that you have mentioned. Palestinians have two aspects, if you like, in their personality, as indeed the Israelis as well. One aspect reflects the anger, the frustration, the pain they feel, the hatred even they feel towards Israelis because of the fact that they're under occupation. But on the other hand, there is a deeper aspect, which is the aspect that is of being predisposed to having a final solution with Israel if it's predicated on the end of occupation. Something analogous also can be seen in Israel, where on the one hand the majority favors a hard-fisted policy against the Palestinians, but also a majority also favors a final peace with the Palestinians. So you have here a paradox, if you like, and the way out of it is to sit down at the table and negotiate not an interim agreement, in my opinion, mm-hmm. but go straight and directly to the hot issues: Jerusalem, refugees, borders, and the final peace.
But Rashid, if, as you say, the Israelis are not ready to talk about the final issues at that table, refugees and borders and Jerusalem, then the Palestinian people who voted for Abbas aren't going to be very patient with them, are they?
Well, if that happens, then I think the two-state solution may be in final jeopardy. If there is an opportunity here, and if the Bush administration and the Sharon government coldly choose not to take it and try to impose something on the Palestinians, then there will be a backlash. I would say before the end of this year, we will see one way or another whether there will be a major reversal on the part of American and Israeli policymakers or whether there will be bitter disappointment. And it will not just be among the Palestinians. It will be all over the Arab world. It will be all over the world where there's absolutely no understanding of American or Israeli policy, no sympathy for it, and a great deal of hope that finally Washington and Tel Aviv will get this right. If they do not, the isolation that Israel will find itself in and the lack of sympathy for Bush administration policy will only increase. So the Palestinians will be bitterly disappointed. But as Sadi said, they're living under occupation anyway. They are suffering a great deal. They will simply have to go back to the bitter disappointment that's been their lot for most of the past 37 and a half years of occupation. Israel, unfortunately, also will suffer if the majority of Israelis, which poll after poll has shown is there, who do not really have sympathy for the settlement enterprise, who really would accept a Palestinian state in the right circumstances, don't find that their leaders speak for them. And if Americans find an administration that buries its head in the sand on yet another Middle East policy issue and refuses to see the opportunity that may be there for the taking.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take a call from Swampscott, Massachusetts. Neil's on the line. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Tell me what you're thinking this morning.
It sounds like I'm missing something. The situation is mature. It's not Iraq. We've had a lot of history here. I think that the premise, I'd like to hear a response to my thoughts. I think the premise is that a resolution is based on Palestinian pride will bring Israeli security, and Palestinian pride is coming together. I haven't heard it emphasized in the world that this, in my opinion, is the first instance of meaningful, significant democracy in the Arab-Muslim world. We just had local elections and a presidential elections. Abu Mazen, who talked about reconciliation with Israel, not only was not killed, he was elected to mm-hmm. be president. So this is a landmark point of pride. An additional point of pride is the Palestinians came from the wilderness with no recognition to being on the cusp of recognition as a nation. And they have pummeled Israel during the Second Intifada in a way that is analogous to how Anwar Sadat pushed the Israelis back at the Suez Canal. So the Palestinians now can stand up with pride that they can stand up against Israel. I live in Israel, okay? It hurt, but still they've done this. And they are democracy. These are remarkable achievements.
Let me take the first point that you've made and talk first with Sari Nusseibeh about that, because it's a different perspective which is not part of this morning's news, and that, Sari, is that there is in this election a pretty potent message of the possibility and the power of democracy within the Arab world and as in our sort of micromanaging of Middle East peace and stuff like that. Are we missing that part of the story?
Well, it comes as a surprise perhaps to the American audience that such a kind of a standard or style of life exists in the Middle East but among Palestinians. But as far as I'm concerned as a Palestinian, I'm not at all surprised. I've grown up in a Palestinian society that I've always considered to be a democratic, a very open society. Of course, it's had its problems, but it's been a democratic society. And even under occupation for the past 30 years, when we did not have an authority, a central, legitimate, so to speak, authority, you must remember that we, as a Palestinian society, have in fact practiced elections internally for our own civil organizations, for our non-governmental organizations. We've practiced elections in various societies, hospitals, and so on and so forth. And so we've actually been used to democracy. We've, in fact, fought and struggled all our lives to live a free life in order to be able to participate as individuals as a people in the determination of our future.
Surely
so I'm not surprised by the last elections.
We're not wrong to use Yasser Arafat's final years as president as a measure of a pretty undemocratic way of running the Palestinian Authority.
I would disagree. You see, first of all, you must remember that 1996, we had the first elections under Oslo, and you must remember there that Yasser Arafat was himself elected. He did not force himself at the time. He was elected. He was an elected leader, just as Abu Mazen today is an elected leader. Now, of course, since then or before then, people might have different points of view about how he actually handled the situation. Let's hope that now with Abu Mazen, it's going to be easier for him to handle the situation in such a way as to encourage the evolution of democratic practices. But this is predicated, you must remember, and as we've heard other people saying, on what Israel, and behind Israel the United States, is prepared to do in order to allow the Palestinian, or this experiment by the Palestinians, in fact, to succeed. And for it to succeed, it has to succeed on two fronts. One front is internal, the other front, just as necessary and important, the end of occupation. This is the be-all, end-all of everything we're talking about, even on this radio show.
Okay, but Rashid, I mean, it is possible, it will be possible for both Israeli leaders and American leaders to say, oh, isn't it wonderful that the Palestinians have a new president, but we're just really not going to do anything for the next few months to see whether or not this person has the power to control the militants and manage the kind of legislative changes that we're talking about.
Well, they may do that, and there may be a few months in which that may be possible, but after that, I don't think it is. Let me just correct something that Neil said. This is not the first significant democracy in the Arab Muslim world. Most Muslim countries have and have long had democratic governments: Bangladesh, Turkey, Indonesia. Even many countries in the Arab world had democratic governments going back to the 19th century and right through the 50s. So this is the first recent democratic election in an Arab country,
right,
which was fully democratic and fully free. But as Sadi pointed out, there was one in 1996, which everybody agreed was a free election. And in a variety of Arab countries, there are powerful democratic movements that have been suppressed by a variety of authoritarian governments. So it's important. I wouldn't in any way minimize its significance. But to say it's the first democratic election in the Arab Muslim world really insults efforts all over the Muslim world and in different parts of the Arab world in the past, which have in many cases been successful. successful in established constitutions and parliaments and so on. We need to know more about this to understand that this is not a blank slate that we're talking about. And these are aspirations that most people in this part of the world very strongly share.
Let's go to Durham, North Carolina for our next call. Jamal's joining us from there. Hi, Jamal.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking clearly, you know, that it, regardless of how many times we are going to have an election in Palestinian territories, there is always coming up from either the Israeli government or the United States government that is going to throw the ball into the Palestinian court with one excuse or another in order to maintain the Palestinians without territory that I consider to be a complete territory until the 67 borders that they can call home. You know, I am from a Syrian descendant, and my parents are from the Golan Heights, and we have been suffering under the Israeli occupation for this process of strangulation with all these illegal settlements that they have been imposing all over the occupied territories. And for us, it's not too much about having a democracy or not. To have democracies, we have to have institutions, and to have institutions, we have to have a civil society that is complete, organized, and under a settlement policy, you know, you cannot have, regardless of how much the Palestinians are going to come up with one offer or another to the Israelis, it's going to be very difficult. I don't see any excuse for the Israelis to come up now and say, okay, there is nothing to show up, we're not going to do anything.
But Jamal, does that mean that Mahmoud Abbas should not work that hard at trying to reorganize the Palestinian Authority, to try and rewrite the laws that need rewriting, to get the legislature to working on the Constitution?
Regardless of the Constitution, the Palestinians do have clearly a Constitution. You know, it's very unkeen from the American media to come up always with the fact that the Palestinians are some kind of uncivilized society. Whatever you go into the media, on the mass outlets of the media, they come up with this fact that the Palestinians are some kind of uncivilized people. They are the most civilized people among the Arab world. They are the most educated. They are the ones that are under occupation, and they are the ones who are doing the fighting for all, you know, what we can consider the pride of all the Arab world.
Jamal, just hang on for half a second. I want to check something with Sari Nusseibeh here. There is some work that needs doing on the Constitution. Am I not right?
Well, it's yes. The basic law has not been passed yet in the Legislative Council, and I think the one of the first things that has to be done is to actually get it passed. But I think what Jamal is referring to is the, you know, the general sense. Everybody agrees what it is, or everybody's working on the assumption of that's what it's going to look like. But it still has to be passed, and I hope it's one of the first things that Abu Mazen will do.
And Rashid, can you give me your own assessment of just exactly how much trouble Mr. Abbas will have with the militant groups? Hamas boycotted the election, but earlier today they said, okay, we're going to support this man. I'm confused by that message of support. Hamas is pretty well dedicated to the destruction of Israel. Mahmoud Abbas is dedicated to peace negotiations. How can they support him?
Well, it's going to be squaring the circle, but there is more there than appears to the eye. Abu Mazen and Fatah and on the one side and Hamas on the other, and for that matter, Abu Mazen on the one side and the Fatah armed groups on the other,
right,
have been engaged in a negotiation for a very long time to see whether a ceasefire from the Palestinian side can take place. All of this, of course, will depend on the Israelis agreeing to a ceasefire. The reason that Abu Mazen's government collapsed in 2003 is because for 50 days the Palestinians agreed to a unilateral ceasefire, which was not matched by the Israeli side. If assassinations, death squads, aerial bombardments, and incursions continue, this whole thing will go down the tubes. But interestingly, Hamas has both, as you say, said that they are willing to work with Abu Mazen as president, but also have participated in the municipal elections, which have begun and which will continue on a rolling basis, and have said that they're willing to consider participation in the legislative elections. If that's the case, if the ceasefire can be brought about, remember, I'm starting a string of ifs. If we then see that followed by an agreement on some form of power sharing to bring Hamas into the political process in a situation where they've ceased fire and where Israel has accepted that and has agreed on its own side to cease fire. Then a whole new dynamic begins. Hamas begins to turn into a political party, which Fatah has already done. And you begin to see a normalization of Palestinian politics and people debating things politically rather than with guns.
I need to stop you there, Rashid, because we're going to take a short break. Quick question for our listeners. President Bush said in 2003 that if there was a democratically elected leader, it was time for peace talks to begin again. Is that likely to happen? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. With me this hour, Sari Nusseibeh, on leave as president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem, currently a fellow at the Radcliffe Institute, joining us here in our Boston studio. Mr. Nusseibeh has long been an advocate of peace negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. In 2003, he was one who helped launch the People's Voice, a nonpartisan initiative for a two-state solution. Rashid Khalidi is the Edward Said Professor of Arab Studies and Director of the Middle East Institute at Columbia University, joining us from New York City. He is the author of a number of books, most recent, Resurrecting Empire, Western Footprints, and America's Perilous Path in the Middle East. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. What's next for Mahmoud Abbas? We're going to Boston, and Jeffrey's joining us. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Dick. Thank you very much. And I hope we can all take just a moment to appreciate what it is we're talking about here. We're talking about the election of Abu Mazen. We're talking about an election where on the Palestinian side there was great participation and a great expression of democracy. On the Israeli side, by all accounts, we're talking about an election that took place with a minimal amount of interference. So hopefully we can just step back and appreciate what's happened. It wasn't too long ago where this would have been unforeseen and probably seen as impossible. Having said that, I wanted to ask the two guests, who I very much appreciate their thoughts and comments, what three things, or one or two or three things, would they like to see Abu Mazen do? Would they like to see the Israeli government do? And would they like to see the American administration do to help Abu Mazen succeed, however they may define that? And then as an adjunct to that question, I'd like to know, is there something the American Jewish community and the American Arab community can do to help contribute to his success as well?
Let's keep the part, Jeffrey, that you've raised on what's next in terms of working towards the peace negotiations. And Rashid, I'm going to start with you here. There have been, sort of gestures from both sides, from the Israelis and from Mahmoud Abbas, as well as, a morning or a late night note of congratulation from President Bush. But does it mean that they need to get down to work on peace negotiations right away? And taking Jeffrey's lead, what's next?
Well, everybody needs to do something. I think what Abu Mazen will be doing is going to Cairo very soon and trying to reach an agreement with Palestinian factions, without which not much is going to happen.
Can I ask you why that has to be done in Cairo?
I'm not sure. I think partly because the Egyptians are brokering arrangements for the Gaza Strip in the situation where when and if Israel does withdraw its forces and settlements from within the Gaza Strip. Also because I think that it helps to have it in a neutral venue.
Right.
In any case, I think that will be a sine qua non, a precondition for what he then has to do, which is to start working on unifying the security services, establishing a rule of law, hopefully firing a few of the most egregiously corrupt old cronies for that matter, of Abu Mazen and of Yasser Arafat and of other old PLO leaders. And begin a house cleaning internally. At the same time, I think that he has to be raising the bar very high in terms of what he demands from both Israel and the United States. It's not sufficient for the Palestinians to be allowed to look into details of a unilaterally decided Israeli move in the Gaza Strip. What is absolutely necessary is that negotiations on the serious issues which Sari Nusseibeh pointed to, refugees, borders, Jerusalem, be begun very, very quickly. And he has to demand that, an end to settlement, end of the occupation, Palestinian statehood in a contiguous, economically viable West Bank and Gaza Strip have to be very quickly on the agenda. And finally, what the United States has to do, and Israel, I think, has to respond to those things. Those things represent what an Israeli majority, I think, would support, but they wouldn't be, obviously are not going to be easy things for any Israeli government to do. Finally, we, the United States, must accept that it's not enough to just slavishly follow the lead of whatever the Sharon government decides to do. It's time for the United States to stake out its own position and say there has to be peace. This requires very difficult decisions, not just on the Palestinian side, but also on the Israeli side, and that it's time to bring this thing to the table. It was brought to the table once in 15 years, in all of the negotiations starting in Madrid in 1991. And until today, the Palestinians and the Israelis were allowed once to talk about these very difficult issues.
Sorry,
that
no,
was the Camp David Taba talks, which of course failed.
So there's a news report that's just come across the wires. President Bush has invited the new Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, to the White House, said he is welcome there at any time. It is a gesture of note only because the White House made such a point of saying that Yasser Arafat was not welcome at the White House. But beyond that, does it count for anything?
Well, I hope it does. I think that if one goes by the various statements that President Bush has been making over the past 2 or 3 years, right back to his speech, which he made in June of 2002, I think one should really expect now a serious engagement by the U.S. administration in the peace process. And I hope that this first call by President Bush to invite Abu Mazen is in fact going to be the step in the in that direction. We need a full engagement by the United States administration in the peace process, not a part-time engagement. We need a full engagement, plus full support to Abu Mazen as far as the financial situation is concerned, because the financial situation of the Palestinians, as you know, is extremely bad. The country is in ruins, and a lot needs to be done in order to reinvest again in the building of the infrastructure and the looking after of the various services. And so, again, the United States' help in this matter is going to be extremely important. If I may, I want to go just back to the initial question that was asked about what various people need to be doing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I think there's a long list, of course, on the Palestinian side, but there's a long list, I think, of things that Israel could be doing at this point, which should be pointed out and perhaps should be emphasized, including, for example, to cease the actions that it's been undertaking unilaterally in the occupied territories. I'm talking about the military actions going into towns and villages and cities and so on, and with the army and carrying out military actions.
Okay, but this
people
at a time when Ariel Sharon is facing a vote of no confidence in the parliament on his, you know, plans to pull out from Gaza. This man is in a precarious political position at the same time.
I think everybody, all leaders at the moment, perhaps can be regarded as being in a precarious position, because this is, after all, a precarious, a very historic moment. And I think it is now that Sharon on the one hand, Abu Mazen on the other hand, and President Bush can show us what kind of leaders they are, because they have to come forward. They have to be clearer than they have ever been before. They have to stick to a peace program that's in the interest of the peoples, whether of the Israeli people, the American people, or the Palestinian people. For this purpose, or for this reason, I think Abu Mazen should come out with a clear peace program, which he hasn't yet done. I think the Israelis should go ahead, Sharon should go ahead, with, in fact, creating the conditions for negotiations on a final settlement, and the Americans should be there full time.
1-800-423-8255. Are any of the three sides ready for that kind of commitment? What are the practical things that need to happen in order for those negotiations to go ahead? We're going to Buffalo, New York for our next call. Joe's with us. Hi, Joe.
Hello. My question is ties in with your last guest comments. What physical infrastructure is there for the new president to use? Can people send email, or are there telephone lines? Do they have to send runners around to get messages to outlying districts and the area? How much is left?
It's a fair question. We look at the television pictures of Arafat's old headquarters, and it's hard to know what's there, what works, what doesn't.
Well, email works, but a lot of the infrastructure has been destroyed. What I mean is, for instance, a lot of the roads, I mean, for example, the airport in Gaza, a lot of the buildings and so on have been destroyed, so a lot has to be done. The whole business, the economy has come to a standstill, basically, over the past 4 years. One of the major problems the Palestinians have and have had for the past few years is the creation of a network of roadblocks right at the gates of the various villages and town centers and so on. And these have to be lifted in order for the Palestinians to be able to travel freely from one town to another, from their villages to their fields, from one village to another and so on. So a lot needs to be done on that at that level. But the internet works, television works, some things work. Certainly the spirit works.
I'm wondering, Rashid, given the fact that the Israeli government agreed to loosen up some of those checkpoints for this election, does that give the new Palestinian president the opportunity to say, you know, maintain that relaxation and I will do my best to make sure that buses don't start blowing up in Jerusalem, and let's see if we can build on that?
Well, that's what I think Abu Mazen is going to Cairo to do, to see to it that buses do not blow up in Jerusalem, and ideally to get a commitment from the Israelis that strawberry pickers are not blown up in their fields in Gaza, which is the kind of thing that's been going on incessantly. There have been dozens of Palestinians killed in a period in which there were no Israeli civilians killed in the last several weeks, incidentally. As we are now told by the Israeli human rights group, B'Tselem, it has been verified that a majority of the 3,500 Palestinians who have been killed in the last 4 years were innocent civilians. Even the Israeli army is beginning to accept that. So both of those things have to happen. But the point that Tzedi has just made is absolutely crucial. There was apparently some slight easing of some of the roadblocks, but we're talking about scores, dozens of roadblocks in a very small area, checkpoints, roadblocks, complete closures, earthen walls blocking roads at the entrance of villages. All of that has to be removed, all of the obstacles to movement, which in fact have been increased over the past 10 or 15 years. The Palestinians moved around much more freely before the peace process began in the 90s than they have any time since. And it's become a choking siege in the last 2 or 3 years. All of that has to be changed, or there will be no Palestinian economy. The Palestinian economy has been crushed essentially by these closures and sieges.
Let's go to Newton for our next call. Susan's joining us on the line from there. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I believe that one thing that needs to happen is an end to the incitement against Israel and Jews on the Palestinian side. And the second thing that I think is
very... Do you mean at the presidential level, or do you mean broader than that, Susan?
I mean broader than that. The textbooks, the sort of general feeling that reference to Israel as the Zionist enemy, for example. The idea that two people need to sit down and divide up land that both have legitimate claims to in some way that makes sense for both. But there needs to be respect. In the Palestinian textbooks, maps don't show Israel to exist at all.
Sari made the point earlier in the program, Susan, that it's not unreasonable for Palestinians to look at Israel as the Zionist enemy because of the state of conflict that has existed between the two for so long.
Well, I disagree, because what are you supposed to do when you're living next door to a group that wants to wipe you off the face of the earth? What country would tolerate repeated attacks on civilians? The second thing, in my opinion, that needs to happen is giving up this right of return. If there is a Palestinian state, then that would be the Palestinian state. I think that to expect Israel to absorb millions of Palestinians would overwhelm them demographically and lose the Jewish character of the state.
Sorry, can you talk to Susan here?
Yeah, Susan, I just want to say actually that what I meant, and I'll repeat what I said, by saying that Israel is regarded as the enemy, is that it is. But that it is with enemies that one makes peace. And therefore, what one needs to do is to work on the creating the culture and the conditions for making peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, so that no longer would the Israelis and Palestinians be enemies to one another. But I think, on the other hand, that it is very important, as Susan is saying, in the textbooks, in the general media, in the mosques, to make sure among the Palestinians that we do not, in fact, encourage the kind of attitude or environment that will make it, in fact, even more difficult for us to achieve peace with Israel. In other words, we should not encourage racism or encourage hatred towards the Israelis, and vice versa, by the way. Also in Israel, something has to be done in order to make sure that that's the case. But may I just say one last thing concerning what Susan said, namely the last point about refugees. This is, again, something I think that's very, very important. And this is the historic point at which I believe people on all sides have to make their positions extremely clear. Now, Abu Mazen and the Palestinian Authority has to make its position vis-à-vis Israel very clear, exactly on the point of refugees, as well as on Jerusalem, on settlements and so on. Do they wish to make peace, definitive peace with Israel, in which case they would have to clarify, make very clear what their compromise is, what compromises they're prepared to make, and likewise on the Israeli side. And I think on the Palestinian side, refugees has to be one major issue on which the Palestinians will declare very unequivocally that we do not want the right of return to in any way or form upset the demographic nature of the state of Israel as a Jewish nation, because it's with a Jewish nation in Israel that the Palestinian people have to make peace.
Susan, you still there?
Yes, I am.
What do you think?
I think that's great. I think that if that is made clear and that's truly the position of the Palestinians as a group, that would be terrific. I'm very worried about Hamas, whose stated goal is to wipe Israel off the map.
And what happens to that, Rashid? What happens to the generation of young men who have been told that it is, in fact, a good thing to, be a suicide bomber, to be a martyr?
Well, you have to offer them something completely different, and you have to change the environment in which they live. The environment in which they live is one in which all they see of Israel is occupation, checkpoints, and death coming from Israel. And only when and only when that has been changed, and that would require, as I've said repeatedly, a mutually binding ceasefire where Israel ceases its incursions in exchange for, hopefully, Abu Mazen achieving withholding of fire by the Palestinian side. Would that be possible? The other point to make, though, is that people like Hamas actually have had positions that are, in interesting ways, beginning to evolve. Before he was assassinated, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin talked of a 100-year truce with Israel. Other Hamas leaders, one of whom has been assassinated, Ismail Abu Shanab, others of whom are still alive, have talked about the same kind of thing. The Hamas leader, Mahmoud Zahar, last night was not talking about the Zionist entity, Al-Kayan al-Sahyuni. He was talking about the Israeli entity on Al Jazeera. So there is the possibility of evolution in a situation where both sides change their positions. But the idea that the Palestinians should shut up and accept occupation and have no right to resist it is, unfortunately, an idea that most Palestinians don't accept. Most Palestinians, I think, would accept that an attack on Israeli civilians is something that the Israelis understandably are not going to put up with. But the idea that if the occupation is meant to continue indefinitely, which is the Sharon policy, the Palestinians just have to sit up and feebly try to negotiate without any response, may work for old-timers like Seti and me, but I'm not sure it'll work for the kids in the camps.
Rashid, I thank you for being with us on the program today.
My pleasure.
Rashid Khalidi, director of the Middle East Institute at Columbia University. Sari Nusseibeh, nice to have you here in the studio with me.
Right.
Sari is on leave as president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem. We also talked earlier in the program with Daoud Katab, director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah. Our program is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenelosa, Jen Matson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugars. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.